the headquarters of Ramsey Solutions, broadcasting from the Pods Moving and Storage Studios. It's the Ramsey Show, where we help people build wealth, do work that they love, and create actual amazing relationships. Dr. John Deloney, Ramsey personality, number one best-selling author and host of the Dr. John Deloney Show on Ramsey Networks. Great podcast that's out there, is my co-host today. And we'll be talking about your life and your money. The phone number is 888-825-5225. Michelle's in Springfield, Illinois. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the Ramsey Show.
Hi, Dave. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I am on baby steps 4, 5, and 6. I have 2 kids. I've worked for this particular company for 12 years. I'm not married yet. Engaged to my children's father for a very long time. recently the company I work for offered me one share ownership. And I guess my question is this something I should do? If it is something I should consider, what do I need to look for? And if it is something I should do, how should I pay for it?
All right. Have they given you a price?
Yes.
What's the price?
The price is $76,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have $76,000?
I do.
Okay. That's good. All right. And I assume this is a small business of some kind.
Yes.
And so one share doesn't matter. And, you know, what matters is how many other shares are there.
There's 110 total.
Shares?
Yes.
Okay. And you're going to have one?
Yep, just one. Just get my foot in the door.
Okay. And, the other 109 are owned by who?
Currently, 8 other people, and they offered the same deal to 10 people total.
Okay. What's the gross revenues of this company?
I have that somewhere. I would have to find that number. Exactly.
Are they trying to expand the executive leadership, or are they trying to do a cash raise by getting their employees to put some money on the table?
They presented it as a, like a reward for service and for the people that are aging out of ownership. You know, they want to retire, some new blood to essentially fill their spot.
Yeah. Okay. So, is this company doing $20 million a year profit?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, to start with, we need to put a value on your share. All right. In order for your share to be worth $76,000, if there's 110 other ones like it, that's $76 million in gross revenues, in profits. And so your share, then it would be about a fourth of that would have to be what the profit is to be to value this company. For this company to have a $76 million value, it would need to have a $20 million net profit. Somewhere in that range. Okay. Otherwise, your share is overvalued. And I really smell the loosey-goosey way this is handled is that they stuck a wet finger in the air instead of actually did a valuation. I think they just said, oh, let's see if we can get some people to buy it at that. You know, I don't really know that there's some math behind this. There might be, but
they did have an independent accounting firm provide a valuation.
Oh, okay. All right, I was wrong. Okay, and so based on that, your 1/110th is worth $76,000 according to them. Okay, now all of that to say, If you were to buy this share, here's the downside. You're what's called a minority shareholder. Your vote does not count because a couple of those guys get together that hold all the shares and they make all the decisions.
Okay.
So you have absolutely no power over how the business is run, whether it is sold, whether we can a product line, put a product line in place, whether we borrow $20 million at the bank tomorrow, whether we fire key employees. You have absolutely no power from this ownership position. None. The same you've got today. Point being, they could destroy the value of the company if they they probably wouldn't do that to themselves on purpose, but they could do it with decisions that you don't agree with.
Okay.
And then your $76,000 is going to be worth nothing. So you're in a powerless position. So I do not ever personally buy into minority shareholder positions. I want at least 51% ownership. In my case, I don't even do partnerships, so I would just buy the company if I was doing it. But in your case, you are powerless against bad decisions or unethical decisions because you are not, just because you're an owner, you don't have any percentage of ownership that gives you power. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's a very, very scary thing. The upside is obviously that if the company continues to grow, and it has obviously done very well at some point in the past, if it continues to grow, your $76,000 could become worth a lot more later. What are the buyout provisions if you wanted to leave?
That I would have to research.
Okay.
So I'm imagine this person you've been dating forever decides, I don't want to be married, and you end up moving across the country
and get a different job.
How do you unload this thing?
Yeah. How do they value your share and how do they buy it?
Okay.
That's very important because you do want to get your $76,000 back.
Well, yes, you would, in that situation, I would get the value back, but it would be 10 years before I did.
It's got a 10-year vest, or they have 10 years to pay you back?
10 years to pay me back.
Don't do this. Don't do this. You have no power, and you have two. It's so illiquid you can't get your money out. No. You're 1/110th. That's a pretty low on the totem pole.
It's almost like buying a CD with no guaranteed rate on it.
Well, and you can't get your money out for 10 years.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't do it. I would stay away from it. It's not palatable to you. It is not a benefit. They're trying to create a benefit, and it's not. You're better off put your $76,000 in mutual funds and just rock on. This is The Ramsey Show. Dr. John Deloney, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host. Our question of the day comes from Neighborly. The Ramsey Show question of the day is brought to you by Neighborly, your hub for home services. Neighborly is the place to find reliable help for your home and trusted local businesses like Glass Doctor, Mr. Appliance, and Mr. Handyman. Visit neighborly.com today and find home experts that are available to serve you.
All right, today's question comes from Jerry in Florida. Jerry writes, "My wife and I are debt-free besides our mortgage, and I'm having a tough time combating a family member who happens to work in wealth management." Oh, geez. "This family member believes that using credit cards and paying them off is a great tool to build credit. This family also believes that using a credit family member also believes that using a credit card is better than cash because of the rewards different cards give you, miles, cashback, etc. With this member working in finance, they are more informative than I am when it comes to managing money, but after listening to you for so long, I can't wrap my head around what they're saying as the best option to build wealth. What's the best way to have a discussion with this family member that I can stop feeling pressured?" Whoa.
I love you, and I don't agree with you, and we're not going to be able to be around each other if you don't shut up. How's that?
or, hey, man, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I'm just not into using credit cards, and I know there's I've heard there's some great things, but I'm just not into using them, but I appreciate it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. You don't get a vote.
Yeah. Don't get a vote.
He's just a dupe. He happens to be in your family, but he's a dupe.
Yeah.
And most people have dupes in their families, and you just, I have family members that vote the wrong way. I'm not going to discuss politics with them because they don't know how to vote. They're not good at it.
And let's look at his family member. Using credit cards and paying them off is a way you build credit. If you care about credit, then that's a thing.
And if you think that credit is going to cause you to build wealth, which is an interesting dichotomy because most millionaires don't believe that.
Correct.
Now, little dude in the wealth management business believes that, but he's 26 and has an MBA.
So he's correct. I'm just opting out of that system. Can
if you want to build credit, yeah, but building credit's not a method to build wealth.
No, it's a waste of, yeah, it's a fun way.
Unless you're wanting to build wealth for the bank.
It's a fun way to run around in a circle and make other people rich. Can you get rewards from using credit cards? Yes. I have chosen in my house with my family to opt out of a system because my flights are not free. The person who pays for my flights is a single mom who can't make her payments, who somebody said, if you use this little plastic card, it'll get you till next week. And she's buying my flights, and I refuse to let the people in the margins pay for crap my family's doing. I'm opting out of that system.
The number of millionaires in the largest study of millionaires ever done that said they made their money on cashback rewards and airline miles is precisely zero.
Zero, none.
None of them. No millionaire ever said, I became wealthy with airline miles. And that's just dumber than crud.
But it's different, Dave. I mean, it's not different. People think they're beating the system, but also the way those points are presented as though the bank or the gas station is hooking you up. These flights are helping you out because you're bros now. They're not. They're not your friend. They're not your friend.
But here, you know, the overall answer to how do you deal with the pressure from a dupe family member is simply this. Those convinced against their will are of the same opinion still, my grandmother used to say. So you're not going to be able to argue with him enough to where he quits being a dupe because he is a professional dupe. I mean, he's just a duper, okay? And so you can't talk to him. You can't talk him out of being who he is. You can't present enough information that he's going to change his mind. There's not going to be an argument about it. And so so once you realize you're not going to be able to change him, he's not going to be able to change you, then the best thing we can do if we want to remain on good terms is not talk about the subject.
Correct.
Because I'm just going to get pissed off at you.
And let's think of the word pressure. Pressure comes from two sides. There's got to be a bottom to it, and it's got to be compressed. I don't allow people to put pressure on me because I don't feel like my back's up against the wall. I'm not going to engage in the conversation. I'm going to walk away from you, right?
Yeah, the first time I had this, I had a guy that was a car dealer that was a Christian, and he called up a friend of mine that was, we had a mutual friend, a pastor, and the pastor said, hey, so-and-so wants to meet with you because he believes, you know, as brothers in Christ that you all have an honest disagreement, and he wants to have a discussion with you about it. Well, he's a car dealer, and he sells car leases. And I said, well, yeah, I'll be happy to meet with him, but the net result of the conversation when we're done is, he's going to go back to the office and lease cars, and I'm going to turn on a microphone and say, if you lease cars, you're stupid. And we both love Jesus. I'm not going to talk him into not leasing cars, and he's not going to present any information as much as I know about the subject that's going to make me suddenly believe leasing cars is a good idea. But I did. This was early in my career. Out of an effort at spirituality, I thought, well, I'll sit down with my brother and we'll try to talk. That was a complete waste of air. It was a complete waste of air because there was nothing was going to change as a result of the conversation. And we did manage to get out of it being kind and nice to each other and agreeing that we're not ever going to agree and that, you know, he's, you know, but he didn't go back and go, I'm going to quit leasing cars. Your little duber wealth manager is not going to quit using his credit card, no matter what you say. So just quit having the conversation is the point. It's useless. I answer questions for people that ask them, not for people who don't ask them.
That's become a life-changing bit of wisdom for me over the last few years. I only answer questions that I'm asked.
Yeah. And so my friend the other day leased a car, came over to my house to show me his new car. It's a fabulous car, by the way. Oh, God, it's a great car. But he didn't come over there for me to teach him about car leases. He'd already made his decision. So he didn't say, "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned." He didn't do that. He just brought his stupid car over, and I love his car, and I love him, and he's an idiot for the way he bought it. But the car is amazing, and I love him, and that's great. And, you know, we've all got a friend that's not smart, and I got one too, you know. And so, but he's got a great car for a little while he rents it, but, you know, that's it. And so, you know, but that, you just got to decide what conversations you're going to enter into. And I'm not going to sit and preach at that guy. It does no good. He's got a car sitting there. Why? You think he's going to take it back because Dave Ramsey doesn't like it? He's not going to take it back. He didn't ask my opinion. He just asked my opinion that I like the color. I do. It's a beautiful car. There you go.
And you might go buy it after he pays for all the depreciation off the lot.
Yeah, probably not that one. But it's a good car. It was a fun conversation. But yeah, you know, it's like my cousin's a, mine's not, but I have had this question over the years. My cousin's a whole life agent, and he sold me the whole life policy. Well, you're not going to talk your cousin into the idea that whole life sucks. It does suck. It's a horrible product, but you're not going to talk a whole life agent into that fact, because he'd have to quit his job if he had integrity. And so this is a big conversation. You're not going to talk him out of it. But you can just explain to them, I'm no longer owning the policy because that's my territory. I get to make decisions inside that fence, and I'm not gonna play anymore. Well, you don't. We're not gonna talk about it anymore because you're not gonna talk him out of it, and he's not gonna talk you into it if you're smart.
Right. Yeah. It's walking away. Walk away.
Yeah.
Walk away.
Can't teach you to vote the right way. We're not gonna talk about politics. It's just, you know, there's no reason to argue. You know, Trump's crazy. Biden can't finish a sentence. You know, and Trump's the problem. He probably caused Biden not to be able to finish a sentence. And so, you know, my God, they're just all evil. And they're, oh, the whole thing. Well, their combined age is 156. There's part of the problem. But yeah, oh, my God. But, you know, people that fall on one side or the other, there is no.
You just caused about 114 wrecks in the United States of America just then.
Well, add it up. If these two doobers run for president, I mean, we're going to have a...
It's going to be sponsored by Insure.
It's going to be sponsored by... What's the diaper? The adult diapers? Oh, God. Nursing home commercials everywhere. This is The Ramsey Show. Thank you for joining us, America. Dr. John Deloney, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host today. Well, the stock market's been up. The stock market's been down. If you look back 12 months ago, it's about where it was. But a lot of people say stuff like, I've lost all my money. No, I mean, it's gone up and gone down and went up again and then went back down again. And it's really sitting about where it was 12 months ago.
Dave, I had that moment. I walked through where the TVs are on with the ticker underneath it. After all the drama of the last few months, I looked. Like, that's exactly where it was last time I looked.
Yep. Here's the facts. If you invest $200 a month from age 25 to age 65, you would have about $2 million at retirement. That's not too good to be true. That's based on the long-term average rate of return of the S&P. So, you know, if you make 12% on your money, $100 a month from age 25 to age 65 is $1,176,000. $100 a month. So a huge predictor of investing is not the rate of return. Whether you become wealthy in investing, the number one predictor is that you actually invest.
No way. We landed on the moon,
Lloyd.
There's
a lot of people talk a lot about investing and have a lot of theories about investing, and they just don't do it. They talk about it. And they talk, well, Ramsey does this and says shouldn't say that and have an opinion. And meanwhile, I'm just plunking money away. And a huge predictor is that you actually invest. So you should get a pro in your corner to find someone who can help you with your investing with mutual funds. Go to RamseySolutions.com/smartvestor. We will connect you with a SmartVestor Pro in your area. They don't work for us, but these are people that follow the stuff that we teach, and they're in the investment world. And most of all, they have the heart of a teacher. And when you click on SmartVestor Pro at RamseySolutions.com, it will drop down a list of the SmartVestor Pros in your area. You can interview all of them and select the one you like best. That's a pretty cool thing. And get somebody in your corner that teaches you, not pressures you. When you meet with an investment professional, if you smell salesman, run. If you smell teacher, lean in and learn. And you're ready, and you'll end up buying there, and that's fine. But you need to know what you're putting money into. Don't do it because I said to. Don't do it because they said to. Do it because you understand it. It's a good investment. SmartVestors at RamseySolutions.com/SmartVestor. All right, Sully is in Raleigh. Hi, Sully. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Better than I deserve. How can I help?
I was going to ask you about the Roth IRA and the 401k. I'm not a big believer in it. I just don't know. I've been always afraid of it because we haven't had like a Great Depression in a long time, or, you know, the economy just goes down. So I've always been thinking, you know, if I invest my money in it, there's going to come a time where the economy is just going to collapse and I'm just going to lose all my money. So I have tried it a couple of times. Like right now I have like 1,600, but I don't know if I should get back into it.
Okay. No, you should not get back into it if you believe it's going to collapse. That would be weird. Right?
Yeah.
The only way you would get back into it is if you got new information that changed your mind about your conclusion. I personally think your conclusion is wrong. Thus, I invest because I think the economy is going to go up over time. It does go up and down. We were just talking about that. But overall, the economy has grown 11.2%. The S&P has gone up 11.2%, which is the average of the stock market, by the way. 11.2% a year, average for over 85 years. That includes the Great Depression, by the way. That's the average.
Do you think, I'm looking at it, like I'm currently just buying, like I bought my house.
Oh, you bought a house? Wait.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee with that house. Why were you comfortable with that house?
I'm actually renting it. I've been renting it for a year and a half now, and I'm making like double the mortgage.
But you bought it.
You're renting it or buying it?
He rented it out, and he bought it as a landlord. You're a landlord.
Yeah.
Okay. But, I mean, you bought this house, and it doesn't have a guarantee it's going to go up. What made you comfortable that it was a good investment?
Because I saw the potential in it, and I saw that I can actually rent it. So I'm my mortgage at 619, but I'm actually renting it at 1,300, and I'm making good money. Even though I'm not taking any profit, I'm still trying to pay off the loan.
So what happens when COVID happens again, and the government says you cannot evict anybody who chooses not to pay for 18 to 24 months?
Well, that's a big hit.
It just happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was just the other day, remember?
Do you think it's going to happen again? Like, is there a possibility?
See, here's what we're doing. Here's the thing, Sully. The weird thing is you got all this positive and optimistic view of what real estate's going to do, and simultaneously you're convinced the stock market's going to crash. And but real estate, you do have a correct view of it, not necessarily about your renter, but you look back and you say, gosh, for the last 30 years, real estate's gone up. Real estate's generally been a good investment. And if you look at the math on how much it's gone up in your area, you bought a house in an area that was stable and had a good potential to go up based on things that were happening around it. You looked at the facts and the history, and based on that, you chose to buy a piece of real estate because you felt good about its future because its history was good. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, right after I bought it, after 3 months, the value of my house went up $30,000. So I'm already...
Yeah, but you missed the point.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm 22.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
So here's the thing, Sully. You need to study the stock market. It has a similar track record of going up in value over a long period of time to real estate. Both have excellent histories of making people money. And so you have a poor man's view of the stock market and a rich man's view of the real estate market.
You also have what I'm going to call a delusional view, and I want you to learn this at 22, man. And I'm telling you from a guy that screwed this up. You just said, I've already made my this much money on my investment in this property because it has been evaluated at a $30,000 increase. That's not real money until you sell this house.
If you sell it tomorrow, you made $30,000. If you didn't sell it, you haven't made anything yet.
And so when it goes up or when it goes down, it's not real money and it's not real loss until you cash out and sell it. My house has gone up considerably because I'm in Nashville. Nashville went bananas the last few months. That's not real money until I choose to sell it. And so I don't count that money. I don't consider myself super like it's not real money, man. So like Dave said, you're choosing what you want to look at positively and negatively. You got to look at all the facts across the picture, man. You can't just pick and choose. Or you're going to bounce from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing, and you're going to be the guy with a whole basement full of Beanie Babies and no money.
Which, Sully, if you look it up in history, there were about the time you were born, there was a bunch of people buying Beanie Babies and thought they were an actual investment. Now my grandkids play with them, and the dog chews on them and that kind of stuff. So, Warren Buffett most famously said, you know, someone came up to him during the 2008 when the stock market went way down. They said, Mr. Buffett, you know, you lost $10 million today on your portfolio. He said, I didn't lose anything. I didn't sell it. It went down in value, but I didn't sell it. It'll come back up. And then you'll say, Mr. Buffett, you made money. No, it just went up and down. Until I sell it, I haven't locked in the losses or the gains. And so you got to keep that in mind, folks. It's on paper until then, and it ain't green paper. This is The Ramsey Show. Our scripture of the day, Ephesians 4, 23 and 24. Be renewed in the spirit of your minds, and to put on the new self created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. Viktor Frankl said, when we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. Caitlin is with us. Caitlin is in Seattle. Hi, Caitlin. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you.
Good. How can we help?
My question is, my husband and I are trying to decide how much to spend when buying a house with cash. My husband is self-employed. He's in the graphic design business, and, you know, with possible recessions coming up and there's, you know, with AI impacting possible future business, we're just kind of, our income's always sort of uncertain. So we always stick with a budget. We always save everything we can.
Love it.
But we are wanting to buy a house with cash. We're renting. We've been renting for a long time.
So how much cash do you have?
Of course. We have $1,070,000. $180,000 of it is in a SEP IRA.
Okay. Well, $180,000 of it's not accessible then. How old are you guys?
Right. We are almost 50. Both of us are 49.
Okay. So you have $800,000. And how much do you have in your other investments, not counting that?
So we only have right now the 180 is in the SEP, and then total $1,070,000, like that's including that. And that's in the bank right now because we're about to buy a house. We wanted to make sure it was accessible right now.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever we
do. So that's your entire net worth.
Yeah.
Is $1,070,000, of which $180,000 is in the SEP. You don't have any other wealth because you don't own a property now.
Correct.
And what's your household income now?
Right now, our income, again, is self-employed, so it varies, but 2020, we made $400 or so. 2021,
what are you thinking of spending on this house?
Well, being that we're in this area, and that's kind of one of the big parts of my question, $700,000 would be a good deal for a house here. And we're trying to decide if it's absolutely crazy. We're going to try to shoot for $600,000 or something like that. It's just hit and miss trying to find that.
You do have two reasonable pieces of data that are pulling at each other on this. One is Seattle is an expensive market, and $700,000 is not a palace. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reasonable mid-market house, right? A little bit above mid-market.
Right.
Then the other piece of data is $700,000 is also almost all your money.
Right.
And that feels nervous.
Right.
So,
yes, it does.
What would Dave and Sharon Ramsey do in your situation? We would probably buy something in the $500,000 range, making $400,000 with a plan to move again in 3 to 5 years and move up with more cash.
Okay.
But I don't want the idea that I've got 80% of my entire net worth with $1 million net worth tied up in a single house that produces absolutely no income does not sound fun to me. That sounds high.
Right.
And so the 700 makes me nervous. It doesn't make me panic, because you make 400, and so the next year you probably will bank a couple of hundred, right?
Yeah, this year so far, we're already at $175,000.
Yeah, I mean, if you do that every year, pretty quick. So let's say you bought something for $500,000. It's not what you want, okay? But 3 years from now, you could add $600,000 to it and go buy $1,000,001 pretty easy. And it will have gone up in value in Seattle, assuming you don't get in an inner city area where your crime is so heavy. And, you know, anarchists are blasting out your windows or something. But, I mean, if you get a reasonably solid neighborhood, a protected neighborhood, you'll do fine there. Seattle's a great market in terms of real estate. And so,
And as for the other, AI is going to disrupt everything and everything's coming down, you can take two tracks on that, man. You can continue just to consume and consume and consume media and lose your mind. Because, again, their goal isn't to tell you the truth. Their goal is to get you to click on stuff. Or you can do like me and a couple of teammates did yesterday. We went and sat with the smartest guy I've ever talked to in my life, the data analyst here, and he taught us about how it works and the way it's moving. And we're just trying to be informed about it, right? And so I can get more data on it. I can get more facts on it. And I can also choose to just follow principles until I know otherwise. But just choosing to sit in a circle and panic, and again, that makes me hyper nervous. You're more stable than I am. But man, putting my entire nest egg in a house like that makes me... Whew.
Yeah, I think I'd keep it down in the 500 range, like I said, and then let's plan with a plan to move up in 3 to 5 years.
Would you take that other 500 or the other 200 to 300 and put it in a
mutual fund
ASAP?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I would add to it. And you know, when she's sitting there with a $2 million net worth and $1 million of it's in a house at the next move, I feel fine about that.
Right.
And now we're getting into a pretty nice property.
And if you're self-employed entrepreneurs and you're making $400,000 or $500,000 a year, don't forget that you have proven to yourself that you can figure stuff out, and
including AI,
whatever's coming down the pipe, man.
Yeah,
we're so quick to forget our skill set outside of I'm just locked into this thing. No, you're that good.
The first time you see that thing function.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's terrifying.
It takes your breath away.
It's terrifying.
As to what it'll be able to do.
Who terrifying.
How many jobs it'll be able to replace.
Instantly,
As long as these people strutting around acting like they're worth something an hour, all of a sudden,
Gone. No question about it.
But on the other hand, there's going to be some ways that smart people are able to use that and make the first fortune they ever made in their life.
Correct.
And ethically use it. And there's a lot of unethical things that can be done with it that'll curl your hair, too. So it's going to be a really interesting landscape next 14, 18 months. But what happens first in these type of things, by the way, is the crooks come out.
Absolutely.
First thing you see. And we're already seeing some of the piracy things they're able to do with it. It's pretty amazing.
So. Neil deGrasse Tyson wrote a fascinating piece the other day about he's betting on this is the end of the internet, because it's going to be so filled so fast with so much garbage, just like our friend who we all know that just won't shut up. You just quit inviting him to the party. And that there will be some sort of pushed back to...
It's Twitter.
Trusted people.
Now, Twitter, it devolved into a sewage discussion to where it was of no value anymore.
And if computers are just...
Thinking people have all left Twitter.
Spitting stuff out all over the place all the time. It's just going to... I'm just going to go talk to Dave because I trust that guy.
You know what? What I mean? It may revitalize stuff like this talk show where people actually get to talk to humans.
Right.
Yeah. A lot like this show needs to be revitalized. It's doing fine. Thank you very much.
And I will say this. With some of the voice capture technology, you might be able to host this show for another couple of hundred years. It's fantastic.
You know what? That in and of itself is really scary. The hologram. Yeah, here we go. This is fun. You're going to be fine, Caitlin. You guys are smart people. Dumb people don't make 400K. Smart people know.
I know a couple.
Yeah.
I know a couple.
Yeah, I do too. But in general, you know how to figure stuff out. You know how to navigate markets, and your husband does, and the creative world, and I think you're going to be great. So, but I would not put 80%, 90% of my $1 million net worth into a single family personal residence.
Let me say this, Dave, and this is something that came up in some of the research articles I read working on a new book. I believe with all my heart, when you're about to do something that your body knows is not a good idea, it will begin to cascade that stress and anxiety through your body. You'll start to see fear everywhere. And so when you start thinking it's all coming down, that's your body trying to get your attention that what you are doing and what you're about to do probably is not a wise idea.
Yeah, there you go.
Or you're on thin ice and you don't even know it. So let's get some wisdom.
Good stuff. Good show today, Austin, Ben, James, Zach, and Andrew, and Dr. John Deloney. I am Dave Ramsey, your host. That puts this hour in the books. We'll be back with you before you know it. In the meantime, remember, there's ultimately only one way to financial peace, and that's to walk daily with the Prince of Peace, Christ Jesus.
Hey, it's Dr. John Deloney. If you love the show and want a deeper dive on your money journey, we have a weekly newsletter that gives you trending and helpful articles and tips on following the Ramsey way. Just go to RamseySolutions.com today to sign up for our newsletter. Again, that's RamseySolutions.com to sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Hey, it's James, producer of The Ramsey Show. This episode is over, but check the episode notes for links to products and services you heard about during this episode. Thanks for listening.